Chapter 5 Sean and Duff sat together inside the lager and watched the sun go down, bleeding below the land, and after it had gone the clouds were oyster and lilac-coloured in the brief twilight. Cantilar threw wood on the fire, and it burnt up fiercely. They ate grilled kudu liver and thick steaks with a rind of yellow fat on them, and they drank brandy with their coffee. The conversation lagged into contented silence, for they were both tired. They sat staring into the fire, too lazy to make the effort required for bed. Sean watched the fire pictures form in the coals, the faces and the phantoms flickering and fading. He saw a tiny temple have its columns pulled out from under it by a fiery Samson, and collapse in a shower of sparks. A burning horse changed majestically into a dragon of blue flame. He looked away to rest his eyes, and when he turned back, there was a small black scorpion scuttling out from under the loose bark on one of the logs. It lifted its tail like the arm of a flamenco dancer, and the flames that ringed it shone on its glossy body armour. Duff was also watching, leaning forward with his elbows on his knees. "Will he sting himself to death before the flames reach him?" he asked softly. "I've heard that they do." "No," said Sean. "Why not? Only man has the intelligence to end the inevitable. In all other creatures, the instinct of survival is too strong," Sean answered him. And the scorpion crabbed sideways from the nearest flames and stopped again, with its raised sting jerking slightly. "Besides, he's immune to his own poison, so he has no choice." "He could jump down into the fire and get it over with," murmured Duff, subdued by the little tragedy. The scorpion started its last desperate circuit of the closing ring. Its tail drooped, and the grip of its claws was unsteady on the rough bark. It was shriveling with the heat, its legs curling up and its tail subsiding. The flames caressed it with swift yellow hands and smeared its shiny body with the dullness of death. The log tipped sideways, and the speck was gone. "Would you?" asked Sean. "Would you have jumped?" Duff sighed softly. "I don't know," he said, and stood up. "I'm going to pump out my bilges and crawl into bed." He walked away and went to stand at the edge of the circle of firelight. Since they had left Pretoria, the small voices of the jackals had yapped discreetly around each outspan. They were so much a part of the African night that they went unnoticed. But now suddenly there was a difference. Only one jackal spoke, and with a voice that stammered shrilly, a sound of pain, a crazy hysterical shrieking that made Sean's skin prickle. He scrambled to his feet and stood staring undecided into the darkness. The jackal was coming towards the camp, coming fast. And suddenly Sean knew what was happening. "Duff!" he called. "Come back here! Run, man, run!" Duff looked back at Sean, helplessly, his hands held low in front of him, and his water arcing around, curving silver in the firelight from his body to the ground. "Duff!" Sean's voice was a shout. "It's a rabid jackal! Run, damn you, run!" The jackal was close now, very close. But at last Duff started to move. He was halfway back to the fire before he tripped. He fell and rolled over and brought his feet up under his body to rise. His head turned to face the darkness from which it would come. Then Sean saw it. It flitted out of the shadows like a grey moth in the bad light, and went straight for where Duff knelt. Sean saw him try to cover his face with his hands as the jackals sprang at him. One of the dogs twisted out of Ember Janie's hand and brushed past Sean's legs. Sean snatched up a piece of firewood and sprinted after it. But already Duff was on his back, his arms flailing frantically as he tried to push away the terrier-sized animal that was slashing at his face and hands. The dog caught it and dragged it off, worrying it, growling through locked jaws. Sean hit the jackal with a club, breaking its back. He swung again and again, beating its body into shapelessness before he turned to Duff. Duff was on his feet now. He had unwound the scarf from his neck and was mopping with it at his face, but the blood dribbled down his chin and blotched the front of his shirt. His hands were trembling. Sean led him close to the fire, pulled Duff's hands down, and examined the bites. His nose was torn, and the flesh of one cheek hung open in a flap. "Sit down." Duff obeyed, holding the scarf to his face again. Sean went quickly to the fire. With a stick, he raked embers into a pile. Then he drew his hunting knife and thrust the blade into the coals. "Ember Janie," he called, without taking his eyes off the knife, "throw that jackal onto the fire. Put on plenty of wood. Don't touch his body with your hands. When you've done that, tie up that dog and keep the others away from it." Sean turned the knife in the fire. "Duff, drink as much of that brandy as you can."
"What are you going to do?"
"You know what I've got to do."
"He bit my wrists as well."
Duff held up his hand for Sean to see the punctures, black holes from which the blood oozed, watery and slow. "Drink," Sean pointed at the brandy bottle. For a second they looked at each other, and Sean saw the horror moving in Duff's eyes, the horror of the hot knife, and the horror of the germs which had been injected into him, the germs that must be burnt out before they escaped into his blood, to breed and ferment there until they ate into his brain and rode him to a screaming, gibbering death. "Drink," said Sean again. Duff took up the bottle and lifted it to his mouth. Sean stooped and pulled the knife out of the fire. He held the blade an inch in the back of his hand. It was not hot enough. He thrust it back into the coals. "Ember Janie, Elubi, stand on each side of the Inkosi's chair. Be ready to hold him." Sean loosened his belt, doubled the thick leather and handed it to Duff. "Bite on this." He turned back to the fire, and this time when he drew the knife, its blade was pale pink. "Are you ready?"
"The work you are about to do will break the hearts of a million maids."
A last coarse attempt at humour from Duff. "Hold him," said Sean. Duff gasped at the touch of the knife, a great shuddering gasp, and his back arched, but the two Zulus held him down remorselessly. The edges of the wound blackened and hissed as Sean ran the blade in deeper. The stink of burning brought the vomit into his throat. He clenched his teeth. When he stepped back, Duff hung slackly in the Zulu's hands. Sweat had soaked his shirt and wet his hair. Sean heated the knife again and cleaned the bites in Duff's wrist, while Duff moaned and writhed weakly in the chair. He smeared axle grease over the burns and bandaged the wrist loosely with strips torn from a clean shirt. They lifted Duff into the wagon and laid him on his cot. Sean went out to where Ember Janie had tied the dog. He found scratches beneath the hair on its shoulder. They put a sack over its head to stop it biting, and Sean cauterized its wounds also. Tie it to the far wagon. Do not let the other dogs near it. See, it has food and water, he told Embijeni. Then he went back to Duff. Delirious with pain and brandy, Duff didn't sleep at all that night, and Sean stayed by his cot until the morning.